This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Well, think about it. When John McCain announced his VP pick around this time 4 years ago, he was instantly and forever upstaged by his running mate. Well, that's not the case this time for Mitt Romney. His pick, Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, was already something of a household name, so there was no real surprise element. The only issue now is what he brings to the table. The state of Wisconsin, I'm sure the Republicans are hoping for that. And he's also got a bona fide conservative agenda, which Romney needed help there as well. But as some analysis has suggested, the pick also, quote, messes with the opponents. I like that. Paul Ryan has been so specific and so studied about his budget proposals that the Democrats were probably shocked he was chosen. Anyway, joining me here are Marissa DeFranco. She's an immigration attorney and former candidate for the United States Senate, State Senator Bob Hedlund, and Scott Lehigh, columnist for the Boston Globe. So I admit it. How about you, Bob? I was completely surprised by this one, by the choice.
I wasn't surprised because I really didn't have any inside track in terms of who I thought he was going to pick. I mean, I wasn't buying into the Portman thing, which seemed to be the consensus kicking around by some of the pundits that was the safe pick. I didn't think that Romney picking someone that bland was going to be something that would enhance the ticket. So to that degree, it was a little bit of a surprise, but not much.
Is this an enhancement?
I think so. I mean, I'm leery to use the word bold because, he's bold because he offers specifics in this Washington, D.C. atmosphere where no one is specific about anything other than pandering. So I'm excited by it, but I've been let down many times before. You know, the last 20 years, I've seen nothing but kind of establishment, big government, internationalist Republicans. And I'd like to see someone who really is a fiscal conservative or maybe even a fiscal libertarian in a sense. But then again, Ryan did vote for the bank bailout and the automotive bailout, which gives me a little bit of pause. So we'll see.
I mean, I guess because he has been so specific, that's why I was surprised, because it really does. It's going to engender a debate, which is good as far as we're concerned. We're in the news business. But I was. You know, whether Romney really wanted that or not. I mean, obviously, he thinks it's going to be good for him.
Well, I think Romney's going to try to have it two ways now. I think he's going to say he's made this choice, which is very much going to energize the base, I think. Paul Ryan really is the American idol of the Republican right. They love the guy. They love his ideas. You watch Mitt now, and he's saying, well, I'm going to have my own plans when I'm president. He doesn't want to get pinned to Ryan's plans. I think that's inevitable. I think their plans are so similar, and Ryan's actually have details that I think that they're fairly taken as a proxy for Romney's own plans. And I think that he will try to fudge that a little bit, but I just don't think that's going to be possible. So I think it really does clarify the debate. And my view of it is it clarifies it in a way that is going to make it harder to appeal to the admittedly small pool of people who are still undecided in this election.
I mean, Paul Ryan, Mercer, has kind of backed off his privatizing Social Security, but he has proposed a fairly dramatic revamp of Medicare, which would basically be a voucher system, kind of like a 401k plan.
Right.
What do you make of it?
It's a completely ridiculous idea. And he's
really
a big fan. First of all, he's a big fan of Ayn Rand. And,
Ayn Rand.
You know, and so was Greenspan and all along the way, all these people who completely tanked the economy. And, you know, to sum it up is, you know, Ayn Rand's philosophy is some people matter and some people don't. And I can't take original credit. That comes from the movie
Dirty Dancing.
Thanks. Yeah.
And I know that movie well.
So, and, you know, to turn Medicare, the problem that I talked about this a lot, about single payer. If we want to actually reduce the cost of Medicare, we need to find a way to have people be healthier by the time they reach the age of 65. And the solution to that is very good preventative care, which comes in the form of single payer, so everybody can have access. That will go a long way to helping take care of Medicare costs, not a voucher system, because you know it's going to happen. We're going to see seniors. I mean, they're going to be dying sooner. They're going to be having...
Why?
Because...
See, this is the kind of thing... I love this kind of debate, but this is exactly what we're going to start hearing more of. But why?
Because we're going to have rationing. That's what a voucher system is, just a euphemism for rationing. I mean, there's no other way about, you know, around it.
It's going to be cost-shifting anyway. Mm-hmm. It will shift the cost. As CBO has looked at this and scored his proposal, it will shift some thousands. I think they said $6,400 of costs from Medicare to seniors when it kicks in I think in 2022,
yeah,
something
it's a
like
while.
Now, I don't know. I mean, that I don't think that I think the people dying in the streets rhetoric is mm-hmm. frankly a little harsh here, but it is a cost shift, and I think people need to recognize that. And here's what's happening overall to keep, and I mean, any way you slice it, if we keep the totality of the Bush tax cuts, that's to say the tax cuts for everyone, including the people making under 200 grand, there are going to have to be cuts in entitlements, specifically Medicare and Medicaid. And Obama wants to keep them for people making out 200,000. So he too will have to do some cuts there. But the difference here is that Romney and Ryan would like to keep the brakes for people making more than $250,000 a year. That's about somewhere between $700 billion and $1 trillion over a decade. Those are added cuts that will have to come out of Medicare and social programs. They also want to offer another great big tax cut
yep.
that they haven't given any idea how to pay for. They say they're going to do it by broadening the base. People say it's impossible. Experts say it's impossible to do that. So that, too, probably will come out of social programs. And that should become clear in this campaign.
The two of them appeared on 60 Minutes last night. I just want to address that tax point because Mitt Romney started to talk and then Paul Ryan finished his thought. But this was them last night talking to, I don't know who they're talking to, but Bob Schieffer.
If you look at the top 1% or 5% or quartile or whatever, they pay the largest share of taxes. And that's not something which I would propose making smaller.
What we're saying is take away the tax shelters that are uniquely enjoyed by people in the top tax brackets so they can't shelter as much money from taxation so you can lower tax rates for everybody to make America more competitive.
They're talking about lowering tax rates to as low as 22% across the board as opposed to the 36 cap that we're at now.
Well, the Tax Policy Center looked at this exhaustive study very recently, and they said you cannot, once you say we're not going to change the treatment of unearned income, investment income, capital gains, dividends, that kind of thing, and the preferential treatments currently taxed at 15%, and these guys have said they're going to protect that. In fact, some of it they would even lower. Once you take that off the table, you cannot broaden the base enough that rich people or upper earners will pay for enough of the tax cut that they get.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll balance it out. That means if you're going to be revenue neutral, if you're not going to increase the deficit, you are going to have to take away breaks from the middle class that will increase their overall burden.
And breaks, you suggest, maybe like the home mortgage deduction.
Right.
And you know, I think that under Romney-Ryan administration, there might be more room, and I'd love to hear Scott's take on this, for compromise in trying to achieve some of these goals of the Simpson-Bowles Commission. Because under this administration, you know, everything's out the window and we've got this line drawn in the sand about tax breaks for the rich, et cetera. But I think there might be room for some compromise under the Romney administration in getting us at least part of the way under the projections and under the recommendations of Simpson-Bowles. And I just want to make one point about Marissa's comment about rationing. I thought she was talking about Obamacare because that was the argument we heard about Obamacare. We're going to see rationing.
Well, Obamacare is actually a Republican idea that came out of the Heritage Foundation with mandates. So, and to clarify, I don't think it's rhetoric to say that people are going to face serious crisis. I'm a doctor's daughter, and you know, I think everybody's seen that, you know, with doctors no longer accepting Medicaid patients, and some will mm-hmm. no longer accept Medicare patients. And that is what we're looking at when we're talking about a voucher system. But to go on the taxes, I mean, if we simply let the Bush tax cuts expire, as the experts have said, that will take care of the deficit. And, you know, everyone talks about how Ryan is this so-called genius about balancing the budget and getting rid of the deficit. But his plan doesn't do that for two decades. And I'm kind of wondering why he gets credit for that when the Democrats under Clinton did it in less than 8 years. So I think it's kind of disingenuous to say that he has this great plan that doesn't work for 20 years.
Well, you're talking about individuals, that's why, because it's going to affect, you know, people's retirement, you know, under 55. It's, you know, people really look at that and say, wait a second, that means me.
Right.
And
he
wants to push it away.
And we also
right.
have a much bigger hole to climb out of now than we did under Clinton.
But he voted for the components of that hole, which are the two rounds of the Bush tax cuts, funding the war without any, you know, essentially without any fee, Medicare right. prescription Part D. I think he voted for as well. Those are the really many of the drivers of the current budget deficit.
And sprinkle in the bailouts too.
Yeah, that's true. TARP, auto bailout. I would at least the carrying costs on them. I just like to point out on Simpson-Bowles though, Bob. Simpson-Bowles. Let's not forget. They did say, and Mitt cites this a lot to say his plan is workable. Simpson-Bowles said, A, let's broaden the base and we can lower some rates. But they also said we need more net revenue. That is, we need more tax revenue than we're currently getting, and they called for increasing it by somewhere, depending on how you look at it, making it a third to a quarter of the overall package. Mm-hmm. Ryan and Romney say absolutely no way. We are not going to do any new net revenue. In fact, we are going to have another big tax cut. So it's very disingenuous of them to cite Simpson-Bowles as though this is a solution they're embracing. They're embracing the broaden the base part of it, but they're not embracing the we need new net revenues part of it, which Simpson-Bowles and every other bipartisan fiscal commission that's looked at the deficit problem has said.
But if you hear the sound cut that we just played of Ryan, don't you think that maybe what he's talking about, or you could interpret that there's room for discussion on things like the elimination of the home mortgage deduction? Yeah. I'm suggesting, and that's broadening revenue.
But what he's saying is
he's talking about eliminating some of these so-called loopholes. Wouldn't you consider that a loophole?
Yeah, but
I would.
Definitely. What he's saying, we'll use that revenue to pay for a new tax cut. He's not saying we'll use that revenue for deficit reduction or so we don't have to have larger cuts in programs like Pell Grants and K-12 education and medical research and Medicare. His broadening all is for a tax cut, and the current deficit he would take care of completely on the budget cutting side.
Senator, do you support getting rid of the home mortgage deduction? I certainly don't.
As part of a broader package to eliminate all loopholes across the board and make our tax code much more equitable and level, I absolutely would.
I mean, it would be devastating.
England eliminated it and home ownership went up. Canada doesn't have it. It's not devastating to the Canadian real estate market.
I'm not so sure we want to compare our success rate to
this is why we're never going to get serious about deficit reduction, because
the corporate tax loopholes are the ones we should be closing for first. We lose $100 billion versus going after the middle class.
I'm saying everybody's comes to the table including the middle class, including the rich, including people who rely on entitlements.
You said the Obama administration isn't willing to give anything. Well, let's look at, for example, the agricultural bill. I mean, we're willing to give up on food stamps. The Democrats were definitely giving away there, but nobody wants to cut on agribusiness. And as an immigration attorney who knows how money to the agribusiness completely gutted the economy of Mexico and further increased undocumented immigration is something that needs to be discussed.
A BRAC commission or something, on Simpson-Bowles, an up or down vote on the whole package. And Obama, who convened Simpson-Bowles, just dismissed it once they came out with their recommendation. So at least we've got a candidate for office in Ryan and Romney talking about some of these things and trying to move the ball up the field.
Ryan was on the Simpson-Bowles commission and he voted against its recommendations. It was a bipartisan commission. He voted against it because he could not countenance any kind of new net revenues. That is to say, any kind of tax hike. It's ridiculous
who
to say
further. Let me ask you this. This is how bad this debate is. Who ran further from Simpson-Bowles, Obama or Ryan? I suggest to you Obama ran further from it.
And someone like Ryan, who talks about limited government, the guy's been in government his entire career. So he's been collecting a nice fat salary from government, and yet, it really irritates me when I get this rhetoric from lifetime politicians who talk about limiting government and knowing how to run things, and they've never been in the private sector like I have, working with small businesses.
Well, maybe Romney has.
Maybe Obama should pick yours as running mate then and get rid of Biden.
Maybe. And Romney's record is, closing down plants and losing jobs.
I'm talking to immigration attorney and former candidate for the United States Senate, Marissa DeFranco, State Senator Bob Hedlund, and Scott Lehigh from the Boston Globe. You were talking when we started first, Marissa, about his countenance for Ayn Rand. I find that fascinating, actually, and because he's also a devout Catholic. She, of course, was an atheist. But, I mean, he really studied this. I read that profile in The New Yorker. I had it lying around, and I picked it up when it was got nominated. This whole thing his father died when he was 16 years old, and he started reading, and he just started, everything kind of came to him. And that's, whether you buy it or not, it's a very thoughtful.
Ayn Rand is kind of comic book philosophy for college sophomores, and I think most people outgrow it. It's a little stupid.
Well, Milton Friedman never outgrew it.
It's brutal. In one word, to sum up Ayn Rand's philosophy, I mean, I read Atlas Shrugged to my, you know, sheer boredom, but I got through it. And it is, it's just brutal. It's this philosophy that, you know, some people are talented and skilled, and the rest of, you know, everybody's poor because
the cream rises to the top.
Right. And, you know, they deserve it because they don't work hard, which is, you know, working with the population I work with, immigrants, kids in foster care, poor people work extremely hard. They have two and three jobs, and cost of living just keeps going up, and wages are stagnant. That's the problem. And it's a fallacy that people are poor because they don't work hard. And they're really trying to get up into just the working class, let alone the middle class. And Ayn Rand's philosophy is, you know, everything against that.
Well, I mean, working hard is one thing. It's also the educational factor. I mean, they believe that the harder you work, the more educated you will become.
Absolutely.
The more educated you become, the better your chances are moving up the ladder.
One of the ironies of Paul Ryan believing that is that, and I don't begrudge him this at all, but his father died when he was a high school kid, and he went to college in part on Social Security benefits, that, you know, a government program that
which Reagan, I think, took away.
A lot of the objectivists would say, the Ayn Rand devotees would say, we shouldn't have. So, I mean, even this great exemplar of what I think, as I say, is a comic book philosophy.
He could have only gotten Social Security benefits until he turned 17.
No. College. Was paid for in part by that. Yeah.
I don't know how.
Well, it's SSI Survivor.
No, I had it for my daughter.
Is that right?
It went away when she turned 17.
Yeah. I just read that in the New York Times long ago.
That's wrong.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well,
because Reagan
took
that away.
Yeah.
It was either graduated high school or turned 17, one or the other, and then bing, you're off it.
Well, I loved The Fountainhead, and Ayn Rand, and, you know, I didn't see it as a comic book type situation.
Well, but you're not today a devotee of Ayn Rand, are you?
To a degree, sure.
Yeah, yes,
absolutely.
Really? Yeah,
absolutely. I'm an unabashed libertarian first.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call myself a Randian, but certainly influenced by the people who she influenced.
Here's the best part of Atlas Shrugged, and the only positive thing that I could find in the book is when they go to the so-called utopia, and John Galt is leading Dagny, I believe her name was, around.
Wow,
and she saw all these, you know, this symphonic orchestra guy, conductor, and he's working at a gas station, and they're all doing these very basic jobs. And she asked, you know, how can you possibly, after reaching the pinnacle of your career and all these other business arts, whatever, do these kinds of jobs? And the response back was that no job is unimportant as long as you do it well. And that very piece out of Ayn Rand is something that I respect and I do believe in, because all jobs are important and it's important that you do them well and they all matter.
See, even you've been influenced.
Very good, Marissa.
Other than that, very.
You know, I was kind of struck by the timing of this thing on a Saturday, and also they were very, very proud of the stealth nature of this. Why? Who cares?
Yeah.
That it was a secret. I mean,
well, I think that's
right.
I think the Romney shop prides itself on its ability to keep a secret and to keep things tight.
I mean, there was whole packages on the network news last night about, you know, flying to Bradley Airport in Hartford and being picked up by the 19-year-old son.
It's kind of stupid. I agree. It's kind of silly.
I don't know. Maybe they're taking a cue from reality TV and wanting, you know, to build the suspense as much as possible.
Maybe that is. That's a good point. I didn't think of that, Scott, that their ability to keep a secret. It's like,
well,
it's
silly. And for the impact element of it, if the news leaked out early, it dilutes the impact, I think. But the question about Saturday, I don't understand that either. The only rational explanation I read anywhere was they wanted to time it so that it wouldn't be timely fodder for Jon Stewart.
Wow, that's bad when you're
that was one analysis I read.
There were no live Olympic events on Saturday morning. I can attest to that, because I was also watching the
what happened to the days where we used to unveil the vice presidential pick at the convention?
That was kind of fun.
That made sense.
Yeah. When was the last
Gave
time
you
that happened?
Made the convention about something, really.
I don't know.
Hey, Bob, you going to
the
convention?
Well, it happened with Quayle.
I am, actually, yes.
What's
I,
your
I survived the
be?
Onslaught from the Liberty slate by a few votes.
Did you? So,
you're going as a committed Romneyite, I'm assuming.
Look at him. Yeah. He's not even.
Yeah. I'm going to wear my Ron Paul t-shirt.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Under my shirt.
So you were a Ron Paul guy.
No, I'm a Romney guy. I was a double agent throughout the campaign, but, you know.
Are you a delegate, a full-fledged delegate?
Yes.
So you're looking forward to this? A week in Tampa.
Am I looking forward to it? I'm going to miss an important softball game that week, so I'm a little bit deflated about that. But other than
that,
I'm
excited. Don't be too enthusiastic.
I mean, the timing of these things, I mean, the two deadliest weeks of the year. God. I mean, the last 2 weeks, you know. Yeah. Now, the first week of September is actually the last week of August because of the timing of Labor Day. So,
well, Bob doesn't have to work down there. I have to go down there and work. He'll be kicking back by the pool, probably with a pina colada in his hand. Yeah. And I'm going to, you know, we journalists are going to be in there.
Maybe a margarita.
Banging out the copy on the thing.
Maybe you can call in.
Yeah, you'll be working real hard.
I've been to every convention since 1976.
Oh, God.
And I'm missing these two.
Wow. Well, I was a guest on, your show live 4 years ago, right?
We did live coverage.
Talking about the Palin
pick. Boston.
Well, yeah. Exactly. Wow.
Think about that compared to it seems like a lot longer ago than 4 years ago, doesn't it? The whole Palin phenomenon.
Actually, it doesn't seem that long ago to me. But I'm excited just for the fact that, you know, having worked with Romney in while serving in the legislature when he was governor.
Dave will remember you. Just kidding.
Hey, you know something?
Well,
that whole thing about he didn't establish relations. The guy after he was governor picked me out of a crowd in Florida. When he was campaigning 4 years ago.
Really?
I was on vacation, and I went to one of his events, and he picked me out. Now, prior to that, he mistook me for Karen Polito's husband at another event.
I thought you were going to say Scott Brown.
No. But, you know, I mean, you can't expect someone in that position to remember everybody they come across. I'm a lowly state senator.
Oh, isn't that more?
And I'll be in the supermarket and can't remember a name with a face often.
That's more of a compliment to you, Bob, because you're unforgettable as opposed to Romney's memory.
Well, it was. I was flattered. I mean, I was in another state, and he saw me and he lit up and he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm on vacation. I thought."
Did he say, "What are you doing here, Bob?"
Yeah, that's the test.
The telling question.
Well, he ad libbed his speech and worked me into his comments.
Really?
And said, "We have a state senator from Massachusetts here," which led him to a segue about Bill Bulger. And he was great that night.
Maybe he thought you were Bill Bulger.
He was very unstructured.
Maybe he was, "What are you doing here?"
No, it wasn't like that.
Okay, what are you looking forward to? This slate of speakers here is like, oh my gosh, let's see. Where is that? Governor Scott Walker is going to be talking. Florida, a lot of Florida people. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi. Oh, boy. Florida Governor Jeb Bush. John McCain. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. Marco Rubio. Oh,
you know what's really notable is that you don't
keep going. I'm waiting.
You don't have a lot of the parade of kooks who actually ran against Mitt speaking. And I think he doesn't want this to be like the 1992 convention when poor George H.W. Bush had Pat Buchanan and all the kind of cultural warriors. And they really made the convention kind of a blot and an albatross for him. Mitt's got basically level-headed, normal people here who are going to making the Republican case, and not Newty's going to be teaching, you know, Gingrich University. Rick Santorum, I guess, has some sort of role, but you're not going to see.
Well,
where's
the accommodation? Where's the person on the list that was the accommodation of Ron Paul, if there was an accommodation?
Well,
of
that's
Ron
a good
Paul.
Question. Yeah,
and Ron Paul's going to be running.
Actually, Rand is going to speak, isn't he? Or is
I'm not sure. I haven't seen him on a list. Yeah. But just like 4 years ago, Ron Paul's running his own event simultaneously. Yeah. And 4 years ago, that was an unbelievable, unbelievable event. It was much, much more well-attended and more enthusiastic than what you had going on at the RNC.
Are you
going
to go visit over there?
I'm going to jump back and forth.
You know,
absolutely.
By the way, I'm making fun of the
bridge.
The list of speakers for the Republican convention. Let me just say right now, the Democrats do not top that.
Jimmy Carter.
Speaker list. Jimmy Carter? Oh,
I can see that in advertisement now.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I probably shouldn't say anything about young speakers.
Are you going?
I'm not going. I'm staying right here in the Commonwealth and working on some local elections, holding signs for some candidates up on the North Shore.
Are you supporting Elizabeth Warren, by the way?
We haven't spoken yet. So,
yet?
No, we've been, it's both, you know, we both have heavy schedules and we've been.
How about the phone?
Heavy schedules.
We have.
I can't take Elizabeth Warren's call right
I'm being,
now. I'm going
I'm
on the Emily Rooney
here.
Show.
Carter is a Nobel Peace Prize laureate. I didn't say he wasn't, you know, a smart Marissa's guy.
Marissa's going to be like Ted Kennedy. Elizabeth Warren's going to be chasing her all over the stage looking for that unity embrace.
Not quite. But speaking of the speaker, I mean, Jimmy Carter, that's great, you know, have him as the speaker. But, you know, the Democrats need to enlarge their roster, you know, maybe sort of younger candidates like I did when I ran for office, encouraging younger people. I'm not sure I still qualify as young, but compared to
well,
Jimmy
like
Carter.
Who should they get?
On their speaker list, you know, I'm actually not sure.
Well, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Well, Sasha and Malia may speak for the Dems.
Well, that would be young.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would like to hear them.
How about Debbie Wasserman Schultz? Let's get her up there.
She's the head, you know, she's the chair, the DNC chair, so.
I think a big role for John Tierney. No, just kidding.
I would have taken an invitation. I would have been happy.
As long as you brought up John Tierney, what is going to happen there, Bob Hedlund?
Well, didn't the state convention prop up someone who was a Democrat who was under indictment at one time, was in a tough race a few years back? And they gave him a prominent role at the state convention. Scott, I seem to recall you tweeting or writing about it.
Maybe. I don't know. I can't remember. I wish my frontal lobe is a sieve for that kind of information, unfortunately.
So we're talking about 6th District Congressman John Tierney. And last week, Common Cause and some others called for a full-fledged ethics investigation over this money that his wife had been collecting, something like $1,000 a month. It came up to about $237,000 over I don't know how many years. Mm-hmm. And the issue being, was it a salary or was it some kind of a gift? She's claiming it was a gift. If it was a salary, it needed to be reported as such. So there's some question about whether the ethics committee, this House Ethics Committee, should look into this. What do you think is going to happen in that race, Bob?
Well, I think obviously the Republican challenger, Richard Tesei, is a great, great shot. It's a morass up there. I can't keep track of all the gifts that fly around that congressional district throughout history. But no, Richard is a tenacious campaigner. He's been laying the groundwork for this for a long time. I know mm-hmm. it's been a lifelong goal of his to go to Congress. He's focused. He's been doing tremendous on fundraising. He certainly has the name recognition up there, and I think he's acquitted himself well as a public servant through the years.
Oh well,
but, you know,
nice. You could do it. You could do the 30-second spot for him.
No, I have great respect
for
Richard.
I approve this.
Let me tell you something. One anecdote about Richard. I was not enthusiastic about him becoming the minority leader in the Senate, and I have to tell you, without question, he did a phenomenal job. He was the best minority leader for me to have worked with, and he and I, on many things, couldn't be further apart. But he was great at building a team concept. The work that he put into the job and the talents he brought to the job were phenomenal.
Well, I live in the district, and it's going to be a tough race. And I can't understand the Democratic Party's strategy here with starting the Tesei website. And, you know, if you live in a glass house, you might not want to. I mean, they want to make this a family contest between the two of them. Really bad idea. I mean,
Tierney, I should say, they're claiming that Tesei helped his dad launder money with some project that was too.
Well,
nobody could even follow it.
And the problem is that no criminal charges. You know, I'm not usually in the business of defending Republicans, but there were no criminal charges. And I'm not saying everything to say his family was on the up and up, but no criminal charges were ever filed. So you better be really sure if you're going to go after someone like in that way that you have a completely clean slate. And the better idea, as it always is to focus on the grassroots. And that's the way Tierney's going to win the seat in having everybody in the district going out. And I'll tell you one observation I've made, Emily, is that I'm getting a lot of emails from people on the North Shore that are going to New Hampshire for Obama. Now,
what does that mean?
That means, why aren't you working in the 6th District for Tierney, and why aren't you working the state for Elizabeth Warren?
Well, why aren't you working this day for Elizabeth Warren?
I'm working local candidates. For local candidates, and that's what I believe in. Down ballot needs help. They don't have millions of dollars.
But I would think if you were criticizing them for that, you're a little bit in a glass house on that one, aren't you?
Absolutely not, because I'm working our neighborhoods and working for local candidates. And like I said, down ballot candidates don't have millions of dollars at their disposal. So
what do you think,
that's
Bob?
What I'm working on.
I think that Elizabeth Warren should try a little harder and setting up a date to get together and have a cup of coffee with Marissa. Simple
Don't
as that.
Don't put the blame on her. We have both have heavy schedules, as
yeah,
I said.
Right. She's very busy, as we know. Too busy to, you know, never mind.
You mean like give you an interview?
She came once.
Well, that's been the complaint that other hosts have had that she sort of has ducked some of the media. Although I got to say, he does it too. I mean, you can't get the guy on the telephone.
Totally
so,
yeah.
you know,
she's coming on right after you get Joe Kennedy.
Yeah. So what about the Brown-Warren race, the whole thing with the Demos, that's her daughter's, she's, I guess, president or whatever you are of one of those organizations. She runs this organization. And they were following up on a lawsuit. I guess they filed the lawsuit over
the motor voter law.
Right, so... So Demos, you know, sent all these notices out to Democrats only, and now the on the state's dime. And so Scott Brown is saying, "Hey, the Warren campaign should reimburse the state. I'm not buying that.
Sounds kind of whiny to me. I mean, I think it's a little hard to be against having people who are eligible to vote vote. I like the attitude more. Look, I'm going to go out and win people over than I am going to, kind of go to the rule book and complain about who's voting and who's not. And
again, who's to say that all those EBT card holders were, that's not Democrats, he sent it to EBT card holders. Who's to say they're not Republicans?
Well, like,
there's an assumption they're all
probably
they
very
they might be, they might be two or three, yeah, right.
They may be.
Well, I don't know. The whole thing just points to the fact that, you know, here in Massachusetts, sometimes it's like everything's an insider game. So here you have the Democrat nominee for U.S. Senate's daughter running this organization, the law firm that handled the case, the wife of the governor is employed at, and I know they did it pro bono, but it just, it's too interconnected. My beef with the whole thing
I
is, you know,
that.
My beef with the whole thing is, you know, we don't have the money to mail out notification when your registration expires on your car now, but,
no,
but we're going to drop $250,000 on this effort.
Well, there was a lawsuit filed.
No, I understand there was a lawsuit filed, but I believe, and Scott will quickly correct me if I'm wrong, we were the only state not to challenge the suit. We just rolled right over on it. Right.
Well, I think we're the only state that certainly sent out the agreed to send out the voter registration
without challenging it. Exactly.
There's a lot of missing pieces that we don't. I mean, you know, also they settled, so we don't know it might have cost
there is
the taxpayer
an
a lot
here,
more money.
Right.
Also, it would be interesting to see how many of these welfare recipients followed through and actually registered. Is there any way to measure that? I would like to know.
Well, you can judge the turnout and different. You can look at different areas based on demographics and see if there was any negligible increase in turnout. I mean, I suspect.
Well, they've got the names of the people. They should try to figure out how many of those.
For what purpose? To see if our
money's
lawsuit
being used well.
Or
paid
dividends?
If our money's being used well.
This is a campaign issue. I find myself saying, huh. I mean, is it really that much of an issue? He's not suggesting that these people should be disenfranchised, I don't think. He's suggesting that she should pay back the money, which is one of those tinny things you say in the summer. And is anyone really who is undecided in this race, I don't think there are many people who are, but going to say, huh, I'm going to decide my vote on this little sideshow? I kind of doubt it.
I think it points to the root issue here is our voter registration laws. We had a debate on Beacon Hill this year about increasing even further access, pre-registering 16 and 17-year-olds. The clerks felt it was an unwieldy program, costly. At what point do we say, you know what, it's pretty darn easy to register to vote in this country as it is, and what kind of further gymnastics do we have to go through to create lawsuits and create access? It's easy to vote now. You can do it when you register. When you register your car, you can do it just about anywhere nowadays. You can do it in high school. Mail-in registration is very online registration.
I don't disagree. You know, from representing people that live in countries, you know, where they walk miles to vote and they face death if they try to. And so, I don't think there's anything wrong with, You want to make sure, as Scott said, enfranchise as many people as possible. And it is sort of a story where, you know, she's not going to pay back the taxpayers of the Commonwealth. That's silly. On the other hand, you know, but what Bob said about the inside game also has validity, and voters will recognize that and then there's the emails going out there, you know, Scott Brown's going after Elizabeth Warren's children. Now, I take some issue with that because, first of all, her daughter is an adult, you know, somewhere around my age. Mm-hmm. She's actively involved in this issue. She's inserted herself into the political realm. So that's a lot different than going after someone's minor children who are children under 18 are off limits, even 21 off limits. But if you have somebody, your daughter or your relative, and they're actively putting themselves into the realm, I'm sorry, you are. It's fair game.
And she should have recused herself from this whole mess. That would have been a red flag from the beginning. She should have said, you know what? I'm not going to get involved in this while my mother's running.
Just as a side issue,
I want to know why a self-reliant libertarian like Bob wants the state to send him a notice telling him when his car registration or his license has expired. Shouldn't you just be able to do that yourself?
Well, I didn't say we collectively. There are a lot of people that think that's important.
Collectively.
Collectively.
It's true. I don't even know if mine has expired. That's something you never look at.
All you have to do is just look at it and see when it expires. And Bob's saying nanny state should tell him when he needs to go renew his license?
I think if we're going to have motor vehicle registry laws, then we should make it easy for people.
All right. So listen, tomorrow, Marissa, the New England Council's Immigration Forum is down at the Seaport Hotel.
Yes.
News Corporation's Rupert Murdoch Black is there. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Are you going to be there?
Oh, I am going to be there, Emily.
That
and hopefully
good.
Front and center. I actually just tweeted about this a week or so ago because during the whole brouhaha when the Arizona decision came out and the healthcare decision came out, I saw this blip twice in 1 week. Governor Rendell and Michael Bloomberg had the same talking point, that we should give automatic green cards to graduates of all of our colleges. And my mouth just dropped. Now, you know, I'm an immigration attorney, and I think immigration is a wonderful thing for this country. But I think that that is a phenomenally bad, I'll just say it, dumb idea. Because right now what we have in immigration is we have an employer match. You know, you have to prove that you can't find a U.S. worker. And it's a good system. Believe me, it needs a lot of reform. But first of all, there should not be anything automatic about a green card. Mm. That is a privilege that people need to earn. Second of all, you're going to give all these green cards out to people who are on F-1 visas. What if they can't find jobs? Now we're going to have more people unemployed, and you put them in direct competition with citizens who are graduates.
Sounds like a Romney talking point. Is coming from there.
Well, no, because I know how the system works.
Russia thinks they should self-deport.
Absolutely.
All right, but you're going to be there.
It's one of those talking points, and it's interesting. It comes from Bloomberg and from Rendell, and what it tells me is that this is what the corporations want. This is what drives immigration policy is big corporations, not the small businesses that I represent. For example, H-1Bs, Microsoft and Infosys, they suck up almost all the H-1Bs.
H-1B?
A specialized worker visa.
Where's the corporations are people, too, I heard someone say.
A person with a bachelor's degree in a specialty occupation.
Okay, that's right.
And, you know, if I have you know, very innovative clients in Massachusetts, and they only want one, maybe two H-1Bs in the span of a year, but they can't get them because they run out because Microsoft and the big corporations are just churning through these specialty visas and taking them all for themselves.
All right. I opened up a Pandora's box here. I didn't mean to. All right. Marissa DeFranco.
Sorry, I will be
thanks
there.
So much for being here. Scott Lehigh from Boston Globe and State Senator Bob Hedlund. Thanks so much for joining us for our politics as usual.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Callie Crossley is back here in Studio 3.
Hey, Emily, we're going to pick up where you guys have left off with a look at an issue that will affect how a lot of people will be voting this year, and that's the economy. We're checking in with Marketplace's Kai Rizdahl for the latest financial stories.
Look forward. I'm Emily Rooney.
I'm Callie Crossley, and this is Boston Public Radio.